broadcasting live from the beautiful Sheraton Grand at Wild Horse Pass for Conscious Capitalism 2019. It's time for CEO Exclusive. Now, here's your host, Sweeney Coe.
All right, so I'm here with Thomas Eckschmidt, co-founder of Conscious Capitalism in Brazil and co-founder of the Conscious Business Journey. So Thomas, for our listeners, share with us what it is that you do and why you think conscious capitalism is important as a business trend.
Oh my God, I do so many things. I'm so active in so many different fronts. I'm from board member in a couple of companies bringing conscious capitalism fundamentals into the business, top down from the board level. I founded three companies that are being under development. It's being developed in Brazil now. I actually co-founded now the last company, which is Conscious Business Journey, with an amazing professional in Israel. And, you know, everything I do is actually inside the conscious capitalism fundamentals. Everything I work on has those principles in some level of some depth being performed or being demonstrated in those businesses. And the other question was, why
is conscious capitalism important? Why should the CEOs who are not here care about this group of 600 people that are meeting to talk about this thing in Arizona?
Cool. This is conscious capitalism is actually the nature of human being. Everyone who starts a business, they don't start something big. I want to make something really big. If you talk to startups, entrepreneurs, they say, I'm going to make something better. And making something better for yourself, for your family, for your community, for the world, you know, it only depends on the size of your impact, but you always start a business trying to make something better, okay? And what that means is that you are an unconscious conscious capitalist when you're trying to make something better. Because otherwise, people just don't go out there to say, I'm going to make something bigger, bigger chairs, bigger buses, bigger cars, bigger constructions. Because if we don't do something better, nobody's going to buy it from us. People just buy things that are better, unless there's nothing else, and that's the only thing you have. But humanity has evolved. The level of consciousness is so much higher. We have more abundance of everything around us. If you think about this generation, our generation, we have more knowledge, information, health, wealth than the previous generation, than our parents. And this gives us the opportunity to actually look at things in a better way. So we want better stuff, better things, better services. And if somebody comes out there to start something that's not better, they're not going to go anywhere. So conscious capitalism is the natural, instinctive way of doing business. And what happens over time when a company grows too much, too fast, starts diverting from that original purpose, from generating value to short-term cash gain, to something that drives their incentives. And then we lose track on what is conscious capitalism, actually.
This is beautiful. So this is not the interview that I thought I was going to do, but I'm going to ask this question because I've wanted to talk to somebody about this for a while. So I am a believer, and my goal of CEO Exclusive is that every single mid-market CEO, because I think that's where you're going to tip, right, should be knowledgeable, work with these principles, and be adhering to conscious business principles. But then you have, I hear beautiful things like conscious capitalism is the nature of being human, right? That's the nature of being. But then you have this other thing called the ego, right? Mm. And greed and these things that are also a part of human nature. And I don't hear anybody in conscious capitalism talking about the dark side. Like everybody's all like sunshine and rainbows and butterflies and, you know, kittens and everything. And I don't hear a lot being addressed of the other stuff, the fact that 80% of people are dissatisfied in their businesses. Yeah. Most people hate their bosses. Most people are not happy to go to work. And part of that is because, you know, there is a lot of darkness. And so I wonder what do you have to say about that? Because it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
It's not. And actually, I can talk from my own experience. I had a business in the past, food traceability, something really different. You have to evangelize your community, your clients, your consumers to understand what it actually is. And our business was focused on farmers and growers. And when you look at your portfolio, oh, you have just those little names, unknown customers and names that nobody actually knows who they are. And one day somebody knocked at my door and said, oh, you have a software company. It was this large multi-agglomerate company in Brazil group and very powerful economic. I said, oh my God, that would be a great name to have in my portfolio of customers, of clients, you know. It's nice to have something that's so strong. Ego. Because we were doing good, we were doing well, people were valuing us, but there's the ego. And I felt the impact of ego, of having a great brand on my list of clients. And the other thing is say, oh my God, this guy's going to pay us more money than the little ones that pay us $100, $200 a month, but we have thousands of those. Instead of, oh, let's look at this big account, great brand.
Seven figures, bam.
Yes. And that was it hit me twice. The short-term financial result of a transaction that was not aligned with our core business. And the ego part that was to have that brand on the list of our customers, of our client list. Which, look at this, guys. These guys buy from us, so we are good. And that was, we actually managed that relationship for 5 years until they decided we're going to discontinue the work that... And we were so thankful for that because that was just a diversion from our core competence, our core business, everything that we believed in. And it goes back to every startup, every entrepreneur is an unconscious, conscious capitalist. The more conscious they become about the framework behind conscious capitalism, the harder it is to deviate from your purpose, from what you're there for. For what you want to do better. What's the change you're going to impact? How are you going to impact the world? What's going to be better once you're there executing your path, your purpose? Mm-hmm.
So then how do you, as somebody who's an advocate of conscious capitalism, begin to address some of these, the issues of ego or where people may not be adhering to the values, you know, you say that you have this higher purpose, or you say that you have these core values, mm-hmm. and you say that you have a culture of integrity and customer service, yes. and all these wonderful things, and then that's not how it is when you go and you interact with people that are deeper in the organization. What do you see as the how conscious capitalism can begin to address, you know, but you mm-hmm. use the word purpose washing. You know, how is that going to be addressed?
I think. Every organization, every leader, well, conscious capitalism starts top down from leadership.
So I agree. That's why we know.
Exactly. That's why the CEO exclusive conversations happen here.
Yeah.
If the CEO does not behave the way in the framework, in the conscious capitalism way, what happens? People will copy that behavior because everybody wants to be boss one day. Say,
monkey see, monkey do.
Exactly. So it's very simple. So if the leader cannot demonstrate those behaviors, the organization will not work. So what does it mean to demonstrate? So you have a purpose. Okay, take every week, once a week, every board meeting, every major meeting, look at your decisions, the decisions that have been made, and say, do those decisions advance our purpose or deviate from our purpose? And once you look at your decision-making process in light of your purpose, you'll be more clear if you are moving forward or not. So that's one thing that really demonstrates. And once you start doing this, people say, well, let's make those decisions. And in a smaller level and a lower level management, if people see that way of making decisions and measuring those decisions against purpose, people say, hey, this decision is not going to move forward. No, but there's just a small thing. It's no small thing. Once you make a decision, every decision should contribute to move your purpose forward. And that gets embedded into your organization, into the culture. People will actually do, am I doing something that will empower people actually to make decisions without asking permissions? Because they know, if I do this, this is going to advance our purpose. And if you look at large companies like Southwest Airlines, for instance, people make decisions every day to advance their purpose. And that's the beauty of it. Whole Foods and all those companies that are purpose-driven. Container Store. So all those companies empower their team to make decisions to move the purpose forward.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so you mentioned one of my favorite things, metrics.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think about measuring purpose? Because you said they need to measure the purpose.
Exactly.
So I have some thoughts about it, but I'd rather hear what you have to say.
I like to think that today most of the metrics are based on financial metrics.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The only dividend people see is the dollar dividend. But there are other ways to get dividend out there to the world. Emotional dividend, social dividend, environmental dividend, spiritual dividend, technological dividend, knowledge dividend, in all kinds of different ways. A couple of years ago, there was a CEO from a construction firm at the CEO summit, and he said, "We are tired of building units. We want to build communities." So big difference. How you make that difference? So building units for people to live in, it's just like a bunch of cookie cutter homes somewhere, and people have to drive everywhere else to live. So what they decided to do, we're going to build the homes and in the center create something that will create a community sense. So they have to control the commercial space, so they have a mix of different businesses that will attract people to stay there, not to go somewhere else. How did they measure? So how much money we make? What's our social impact? Let's think about a social component. How kids are doing at school. Do they get better scores, better, you know, learn better? Yes, you can measure that because in that community, at that zip code, you have an idea how education behaves. What's the outcome of the education? Once you create a better community, those kids should perform better.
Right.
So now immediately, after 1, 2, 3 years, you know that your investment, your project generated social impact. Let's say health. Okay. How many visits to emergency rooms we have? What are the visits? Once you have a better community, you might have less visits to emergency rooms. Security. How much robbery, how much, you know,
crime
you have in that area. Once you have a stronger community, how much has that index lowered? So now you create other metrics, other dividends, social, health, security dividends that will generate a healthier community, a happier community, and that will generate healthier and thriving businesses all over the same place. So it's changing the focus. Well, let's deliver more quantity of homes and make more money. No, let's deliver stronger communities, better communities. So it's changing the metric from more to better. When you start measuring better, you can't measure it by on your own. You need the others to tell you if you're better or not. Because being bigger, it's easier. I just look at my number and the competitor. I'm bigger. But being better, I don't have my number. My number comes from the outside, from those who perceive that value. And that's the mindset we have to change. How do we go back to the startup mentality to make something better, not just bigger? Bigger is easy. Just reduce cost, more throughput, efficiency, but make it better? That's the challenge. That's where you have to put more effort into thinking, what are the right metrics? What are the metrics? Where are they? What are they? And how do they make that needle move forward?
Yeah. But what do you say to the capitalist that says that, like, I want bigger. Like, I actually want more money. I'm sorry, Thomas. I'm a bad person. I actually do want more money.
So I, well, the truth is you get more money through this. That's the beauty of this. Okay. That's the beauty. But if you focus on the money, it will go down. It will just drain the source of money. If you focus on everything else, there was more money coming up, more financial result. If you look at the Field Guide book we just published last year, mm-hmm. There's the statistics. You know,
are you the co-author?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay,
with
great.
Raj and okay. Timothy Henry. Yes.
I forgot. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's also a great story. And but if you look at the financial results, they're, you know, 7 to 10 times bigger than the average market. You know, last year I was in Israel and we wrote, it was around Black Friday, Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And we wrote an article in Israel about BlackRock and Black Friday. Because the CEO of BlackRock is saying, we're looking for companies that have long-term strategies, not next quarter results. And we want to invest in them. And Black Friday is the most old economy, you know, strategy ever. You just dump whatever you have. You don't want it anymore. You just make people buy.
But Black Friday isn't even that black anymore. Like, it's kind of spread out over.
Yes.
Anyway.
But the concept is making people buy what they don't need.
Yeah.
It's taking people to moral bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
That's moral bankruptcy,
and financial
right?
bankruptcy.
Well, financial too, but ultimately it's moral.
Right.
A company making you buy something you don't need, that's morally unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So this is... You know, a
but
lot
it's
of
American. It's very American. And we eat food we don't
everywhere.
Need. You know, we
it's
eat
everywhere.
Food we don't need. We buy stuff we don't need.
That's Monopoly. You know that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know the game Monopoly? The game, you know, I don't know if the new games being printed now, they actually changed the rule. But the old, like 10, 20 years ago, the rule was accumulate most money possible, taking the others to bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And that's what companies do. Most of the companies, they bankrupt their supplier by stretching the payment terms to 180 days. And they're small suppliers. They don't get better credit than the large company. They take employees to emotional bankruptcy with a lack of transparency, lack of communication, lack of, you know, sharing what's going on. So people are afraid, scared, so they don't make any contribution. A scared animal, how does they behave? How do a scared animal behave? A scared person, they're not creative. They don't add value. They just want to go through the day and be happy they made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and get the paycheck.
And get the paycheck. And then you get customers. You get to the moral bankruptcy. Make them buy things that they don't need. So that's the Monopoly game. We have to change their messages from BlackRock saying the largest largest investment firm in the world say, we're not looking for companies or CEOs that have short-term targets. We want long-term strategies. Our customers are with us for 20 years. They ain't going to stay more. They're going to stay another 20 years. They're not going to cash out because one quarter was really good and they cash out. They're going to stay. So all the messages out there are adding up to the ultimate message. We need to change how we exchange value. And maybe we are in the midst of a big revolution because socialism has always been great in distributing wealth until the wealth was over because they failed in producing it. Capitalism has been great in producing a lot of wealth but forgot the distribution part. Now we need to build from those two stones a new fundamental, something new. But needs to have good distribution and needs to have good production.
Mm-hmm. So the socialism thing is coming up again. I love this. I wrote an article about it a couple weeks ago, so I'm like so into this. All right, so the thing that I want to ask about the socialism question is that I don't think socialism is going to work because I don't think you can force people to do stuff, right? Like you try to force people to distribute the wealth, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also can't force people to have the values associated with conscious capitalism where they voluntarily want to give to employees, mm-hmm. provide good health care, do the conscious thing. So how do you deal with the greed question? I mean, the fundamental issue with capitalism as it is today, I think one of them, is greed. People don't want to. I have my 10, 20, 100 billion dollars. Like, I don't necessarily care. Like, I'm happy with my money, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the greed issue?
I think this is, it's a development, a consciousness development in humanity. The same way, you know, when we look at the 19th century, and there's a great documentary talking about the man who made America. They came from 5,000 years of scarcity. People lived on average 30 years, had less than $500 of income per year. Health was really bad. Everything was bad. So as we move towards a more abundant world, people start changing. And some of the people, they're really greedy because they never had anything in the past. So they want to accumulate. They need to accumulate because they're scared. People who grew up on the more abundant world, they have a different behavior. And it's our responsibility with a higher level of consciousness to go down to the other level of consciousness and talk on their language, on their way of understanding. Because if you talk about purpose and somebody's starving, I don't care about purpose. I want my food today. So how do I go back to that level and help to elevate those people and hope they change? Because for sure, if they're down there surviving, they're not going to change. But if you allow them to elevate to a better life, they might change. But you have to believe that the change will happen, maybe not on their generation, but maybe on the next one. If we don't hand out, if you don't, you know, give your hand to bring those people up to par to where we stand, the world is not going to change, or it's going to take longer to change.
But scarcity as a human construct, because this is, I love this, right? This is such a good conversation. I believe that part of, you know, my mission and CEO Exclusive and Conscious Capitalism, fundamentally, if we go all the way to like the roots, is about undermining the belief in scarcity, right? Like, fundamentally, it's changing the paradigm that says that resources are scarce, ideas are scarce, whatever, whatever, whatever. And the fact that people believe that scarcity is the reality, mm-hmm. they believe that scarcity is real. I believe it's an illusion, but they believe that scarcity is real. Is what drives some of these other dysfunctional behaviors, mm-hmm. right? It drives the hoarding of money. It drives unhealthy competition. It drives a lot of perverse behavior because people believe that it's either me or you. Like, if it's a choice between you and me, it's going to be me,
yes.
right? But if there's no choice, you know, if that is a false choice, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, yeah, I help you and you help me, and then there's more for all of us. But fundamentally, right now, that's not where the consciousness is.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think, because I've had this conversation with CEOs who very much trapped in the scarcity mindset, very much believing that scarcity is real because scarcity looks real. It looks real. How do you think about that bigger conversation? Because that's the quantum leap that people need to make. Like, people, in order to, I think, embrace conscious capitalism, there is that quantum leap that says, okay, scarcity actually is not true, or I'm willing to suspend my belief that scarcity is the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get people to make the quantum leap?
Well, first you mentioned is fear. People fear that there might not be enough. So what they do, they accumulate, they want to take from others and accumulate.
Yeah, if it's a choice between you and me, it's going
to
be me.
Exactly. So we go back to, we need to actually be the helping hand for those who are scared, who don't have or have less, to elevate their level of consciousness. Educate. The big change in the world will go through education. Every single country has a wall. We talk so much about the wall in the U.S. Yeah, Brazil had elections last year. We have a wall of the underprivileged and the privileged. In Israel, I was there a couple of months ago and delivered 2 training on conscious capitalism. There's a wall. Everywhere there's a wall. And the wall that divides us most of the time is an invisible wall. The wall generated by fear. Because if you tap into the group of people on some side of a wall saying, you know, bring up a fear, they're going to join you against that fear, against that enemy, against something that does not exist. So we that are more conscious, or the group of people that are more conscious, do better business. They have the responsibility to help the others. And there's no guarantee that's going to work on this generation, but it's going to be a seed for the next generation. So if we think about capitalism, capitalism has existed for the last 200 and something years. Before capitalism, we lived in poverty. 95% of the population lived in poverty, lived 30 years. Now, after, you know, 5,000 years living like this, in 200 years, we did a leap change, like huge, dramatic change from living 30 years life expectancy to over 70, from income, average income 500 to over 7,000 average income. Poverty from 95% dropped to 15%. So that was in 200 years. We can't expect in one more generation everybody going to switch. So there is a time to actually, we need to give time to people to evolve, and we can speed that up by educating them, by teaching them, by stopping that fear, trying to avoid giving alternatives. So that's your fear here. We're going to get something that will make life better, that give you some additional guarantees. So that's the challenge. We need to wake up. Our responsibility as a business leader, as a conscious business leader, is not only to run a conscious business, but to run a conscious community, to run a conscious country, and to run a conscious world. And the businesses are beyond borders these days. How many businesses don't care about borders? They do business all over the world. So what are these businesses doing actually to make that change? To actually make sure that their long-term strategy outlasts the path of change on human consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about education quite a bit. What do you think it's gonna take to get? So you know, I've been talking about mid-market CEOs. I think they're gonna be the tipping point, but that's maybe just my thing. What do you think it's gonna take to get to full adoption?
Well, I think mid-market CEOs are the next big CEOs. So that's where we have to tap into, because the ones that are out there, the big ones that are not making the move now, they're going to fail. Just look at the Fortune 500 list. How many of the companies that are on the top today were not even there 20 years, right? So the mid-market CEOs, those are the ones much more agile to make the change, ready, prepared. They grew up, they're emerging in a more abundant world with different ideas. So that's where the change will come from. And those are the companies, pay attention to them, they're brands emerging mm-hmm. from nothing. Like, that didn't exist like 3 years ago, 4 years. Google, mm-hmm. 20 years. That's a lifetime. My daughter is, she's 15. She grew up in a world that did not exist when we were younger. When she asked me, can I have a Facebook account, when she was, seven, she said, no, it's 13. Her answer was, how old were you when you had your first Facebook account? I didn't even have a Facebook account at that time. I did to get one to understand how it works.
I didn't have a computer.
Exactly. See, that has such a tremendous change. And when you think about the baby boomers, all these millennials, these generations, I think that generation thing is more a behavior pattern than specific ages when you were born. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at China, India, Brazil, we have digital baby boomers. They're starting to make money and they just want to buy stuff. That's when the baby boomer generation say, well, we're growing, we have a job forever, and we want to buy house and home and stuff. And the new generation, the millennials, they say, no, I don't want. But we had millennials in the past that say, I don't need all this. I can live with much less. Does it mean that there were millennials born like last century? Those are interesting things. How do we change the level of consciousness of people? And the best way to do this is through business. It's the most innovative way of organizing people, the most creative, the most, fast, agile, everything. Government reacts. Business proactively acts on future needs. Right?
Great. All right, so for the CEO who's listening to this, what's your closing thought?
my thought is always, you know, get down into what are the movements out there? What's the framework for conscious capitalism? Make sure I understand those frameworks. Make sure they fit your business and you make your organization aware of this way of doing business. Because the further along you get, the harder it will be to change. So the earlier you start, the stronger you get. And the faster you make that knowledge permeate your organization, more contributions you will get out of that organization, out of that huge amount of people working for you, for your cause. So what is your cause? And if you're not here with your business solving a problem, you might be at the other side causing one. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's time to wake up, look at what are you resolving in people's life? What are you fixing? Make that, turn that into a purpose. Make that a strong statement and drive your business through those fundamentals of conscious capitalism. Make every single person aware of that. Integrate your stakeholders. Develop a culture that will, you know, last longer than your leadership, than your presence. And then you will be able to actually create leaders to change the world around us.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Thomas.
Thank you.